Welcome to episode 96. I'm Stuart McCullough. I'm the CEO of VHAA. And it's time for this week's Industrial Roundup. For this week's Industrial Roundup, and starting again with community health, thanks to all those community health members who gave us feedback with regards to the best way to do the enterprise agreement forums for those agreements that have been approved or are awaiting approval from the Fair Work Commission. Those agreements include the social and community services agreement, the health and allied managers and admin agreement, allied health professionals agreement, and the dental therapists agreement. We'll proceed to get those enterprise agreement forums organised, and we look forward to conducting those sessions soon. We anticipate lodging our application to the Fair Work Commission this week for the medical scientists agreement. Congratulations to all those community health members who secured a valid majority in support of that agreement. With respect to our health services, this week we're attending another meeting of the Diversity Working Group in Geelong. We've been part of that group for some time, and it's a group that focuses on employment opportunities for those of an Indigenous background or employees with disabilities. We're also returning this week to the Fair Work Commission to continue our discussions with regards to the savings schedules applying to medical specialists. Substantial progress has been made to these. The key outstanding issue with regards to those schedules really is the scope of their application. That is, whether they apply to those who had entitlements at the time that the savings provision was first introduced in December 2013, or whether they also apply to doctors who have been employed subsequent to that. I'd like to thank all of those members who have been giving their feedback with regards to the draft schedules as that process has gone forward. There's an SDPPWG meeting this week with respect to the medical scientists agreement. At that meeting, we'll be joined by Professor Bartram, who is the author of, or one of the authors of, the RMIT report with respect to rostering practices. This follows correspondence from VHAA to RMIT with respect to the report that it produced on rostering practices. The date of that correspondence was the 14th of February, and in that letter we outlined our concerns with respect to the report, and in particular the recommendation in terms of proposed additional EFT, in particular our concern that we did not believe that there was an adequate evidentiary basis for that recommendation. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHA Community app. That's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. It's time now for the weekly update.
Good day, and welcome to the VHI Weekly Update, where we go in-depth on a number of different topics. My name is Yunbin Lin, and joining me today is Rem Richards, Workplace Relations Consultant. How are you, Rem?
Good. Thanks for having me, Yunbin.
All right. I think as tradition goes, could I have you reveal today's clue for the podcast? Could you tell everyone what the clue is, Rem?
Well, it's it must be about Molly. It has to be about Molly.
Well,
Molly.
For those in the audience, this is my dog. And no, Rem, you couldn't be more wrong. This is not about Molly. Molly has a ball of teeth in her mouth with a big smile.
Yep.
What do you think today's podcast might be about?
It must be about the upcoming General Dentist and Special Dentist EBA.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think that must be the first time anyone's gotten a clue right on the second go. So, thank you, Rem.
No, so that's okay. So, Yunbin, have the dentist agreement been formally approved and certified by the Commission?
No, not yet. I think that commission guidelines generally say that it takes about between 12 and 16 weeks to approve an agreement. Now, both of these agreements were lodged in late October of 2018, yep. And we've only just received correspondence in early February, but not relating to this agreement, to another one of the ones that were lodged at the same time. So I think these timelines are often aspirational, as we've been told.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. So when do you expect that these two agreements might be certified?
Well, I think if we assume that we might get late correspondence in late February, and we will then provide the Commission with a response if required, I'm anticipating that we're looking at late March at this stage.
Okay, cool. And what's the length of the agreements?
So it's a 4-year agreement, as are most of our agreements, with a nominal expiry date of the 1st of July in 2021.
Great. So what about some of the key changes to both the general dentist and specialist dentist agreement? Could you, I suppose my understanding is that the changes to these two agreements are relatively similar.
Correct. So I think they're both different agreements. However, what's been bargained in respect of both have been pretty much the same. So I think the essentially the same wage increases and entitlements have been applied.
Right, right. So if I remember correctly, this was something in the order of 6% in the first year on 1 July 2018, 6% in the next year, and then 3% in the 2 years thereafter. Would that be correct?
Yes. Also, all employees at level 3 will uplift one pay point effective July 1, 2018. So by way of example, your level 4A dentist will increase from a starting salary of $106,940 to $110,000 moving forward. There's also other monetary entitlements.
Yeah, so with the monetary entitlements, what are those changes, or what might they be?
So I think staff will be pleased to note that full and part-time employees will be entitled to a lump sum payment of $2,000, which is pro rata for part-time employees, obviously. This is to be paid to all employees who were employed by, I guess, employers on or after the first full pay period from 1 July 2018.
So a total of 18% in pay increases and an additional $2,000 per EFT in payments. That's pretty impressive. What else in terms of monetary entitlement?
I think it's also worth pointing out that there's the inclusion of a new professional support allowance. This is around clauses 58 and 59 of the General Dentist Agreement, for example.
Yep.
Essentially, employees can claim up to $2,000 a year to assist with their professional development initiatives. And this is, I guess, a reimbursable amount, which is payable from the first full pay period on or after 1 July and also in each year thereafter. So 1 July of 2019, 20 and 21.
Yep. Okay. And does that figure accumulate?
That does not accumulate.
Okay, cool. Great. So what can the professional support allowance be used for?
It's a good question. I think the agreement states that it can be used for approved costs, which might include CPD events. But also, interestingly, it also includes the membership of a professional association, which is, I guess, different to some of the other agreements that we have. This might include membership of the ADAVB, for instance.
Okay, so staff will be paid more and be given more opportunities for development, which is great for their overall development. But I heard there's also changes to parental leave entitlements.
Correct. So amongst other things, there's also an additional 2 weeks of paid parental leave in this agreement.
Yep.
So dentists and specialist dentists will be entitled to 12 weeks of paid parental leave. The clause really otherwise remains unchanged.
Okay, so that's another reason to be a dentist in the public hospital system in Victoria. For a lot of these agreements, we've been working on at VHIA. We've also worked on standardising some of the clauses across those agreements, and particularly creating some commonality. So can you tell me what clauses have been introduced or updated as a result of that?
That's a good question. We've worked on updating some of the clauses across both the specialist dentists and the general dentist clauses, specialist dentists and general dentist agreements. I think we might call these, or we often refer to these as common clauses. So these would be clauses such as your consultation, your dispute resolution, discipline, transition to retirement, fitness for work, family violence leave, parental leave, and I guess the related clauses around parental leave, such as your breastfeeding, prenatal, adoption leave, and the like.
Okay. And predominantly, where have these clauses come from?
So these clauses have come from the nurses' agreement. Most of these clauses have had not been changed, but I think it is worth pointing out that we've updated some of the words, especially in the parental leave clause. So by way of example, I think previously the parental leave clause would have said primary carer taking long parental leave will be entitled to, whereas now it reads an eligible employee who will be the primary carer at the time of the birth or the adoption of the child will be entitled to.
Okay, so it provides, I guess, better clarity as to who's entitled and only at that point in time.
Correct. I think generally this hasn't been an issue, but I do know that there have been one or two disputes about this in the past.
Thanks, Yuman. So I've had a look at the agreements and I think there are some new clauses in there that we haven't quite talked about yet. And I think those are casual conversion, fixed-term employment, higher duties, a time limit on higher duties, overtime, workload and value-based oral healthcare. There's quite a few in there, so it's probably a good opportunity to go over some of the simpler ones and go into a bit more detail around the new ones. So I take it from casual conversion and fixed-term employment, they're quite similar to those in other agreements. Would that be correct?
Yes, so you've got a clause that essentially facilitates either the employee or employer making a request that the employee might be better classified as a permanent employee, and we like permanent employment in, I think, the Victorian public health care system. The fixed-term employment clause is really about the purpose or meaning of what, a true fixed-term employment contract might be.
Okay, all right. And what about high duty?
So this is a clause that wasn't in the general dentist or the specialist dentist agreements previously. It really just allows for higher duties to be completed by multiple part-time employees in a job share arrangement. Yep. The payment is then to be commensurate with the proportion of the higher duties required by each person.
Yep. Okay. And I guess how does that relate to a time limit on the higher duties clause?
So that's an interesting clause. I think it provides that the employee who is performing a role to which I guess he or she is doing higher duties for a period or a continuous period of 12 months or more due to a vacancy will be entitled to be promoted or appointed to that role unless he or she declines in writing.
How about overtime? So that doesn't sound too controversial.
Correct. So that's just the usual clause that says employees who perform overtime get paid time and a half for the first 2 hours and double time thereafter. It does have a provision which says that employees may have overtime compensated by time off in lieu, which is to be taken within a 28-day cycle or to be paid in the next pay period.
Okay, great. So workload has probably been a persistent theme from a bargaining perspective and from a union perspective, I guess. So that's now in the agreement. Can you take us through that?
Sure. I think it's something you might be quite familiar with. I think we pulled this clause from the medical scientist agreement, in fact.
Yep.
And it really just acknowledges the benefit of, I guess, having an agreement about balancing out professional and work life, and family life, So the parties to the agreement will look to ensure that there's fair allocation of work and, I guess, adequate staffing.
Yeah, okay. So now this is a clause that I definitely haven't seen before, even heard of. What is value-based oral healthcare?
Right, so this clause really works in conjunction with the Appendix 5 in the agreement, and it relates specifically to agreed changes in the dental workforce that are given consideration and, I guess, some effect in the agreement. I think to put it simply, the parties agree to use initiatives within the productivity offsets in the agreement, and that's listed in the appendix, to work towards a value-based oral healthcare model. I guess this means using clinicians to the full extent of their scope to promote a more efficient public dentistry system.
Right, okay, so that probably leads us to the next question, which what's an example in practice?
So I think you've got many clinicians in the dental, I guess, workforce who might be able to perform similar procedures. Yep. So take a really common example, your standard clean or checkup, you can have performed by either a dentist or a dental therapist. So instead of using a dentist who cost more to do a basic clean and checkup, you can engage a dental therapist and thereby free up a dentist's time to do more, complex procedures such as your root canals or your very difficult extractions.
Okay. So that makes a lot of sense and sounds really efficient. Are there any other changes that we haven't touched on yet?
Yes, very quickly. So there is, two other things that I think we should mention. The DEWA, so DWAU performance allowance, which was a feature of the last round of agreements, has been removed by agreement through the parties. And there's also an introduction of a new classification structure. So that's the clinical manager/hybrid classifications.
Sure. So, and what do those classifications mean in the context of the agreement?
So these are new classifications that recognize there are senior dental staff in the public hospital system that are involved not only from a clinical perspective, but also a managerial one. I think traditionally you might expect that as a clinician becomes more senior, he or she might be engaged or expected to do more work or work that's more difficult from a clinical perspective,
yep,
or might be engaged to work more as a manager, but not really both. I think you'll find that there are some clinics out there where a senior dentist might be expected to be both.
Yeah.
And therefore there's a higher rate of pay and as such classification structure to reflect, I guess, this change in the workforce over time.
Yeah, okay. So really it recognizes that there are instances where clinicians might be required to do both.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So how do people reach this new classification?
That's a good question. I think in this agreement, and given it's a new thing, it's been agreed that there is 10 EFT allocated across the state,
yep,
and that's to be agreed between the parties as to how this is going to be allocated. So that will come through the SDPP process following the agreement.
Yeah, okay. So that leads to our next question. How about the SDPP? Has that been included in this agreement or these agreements?
Yes. So we've got a sort of standard SDPP clause, but I think the ones that are particular to this agreement would be, I guess, improving patient treatment times and experiences through flow improvements, improved discharge arrangements, and reductions in did not attend rates,
yep,
reducing illness and injury through occupational health and safety interventions, adopting best leave.
Yep.
Sorry, adopting best practice leave management arrangements. I think some of this stuff is quite common. Enhancing patient safety and outcomes through increases in immunization, vaccination rates, improving patient satisfaction levels, and best practice in addressing absenteeism. So I think the SDPPWG will, yep, have a lot of work to do, having regard for the implementation of these new classifications, as well as overall improving the efficiency of the oral healthcare system through, I guess, this value-based oral healthcare model.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, so how about the implementation of the agreement? Is there an implementation guide at this point?
So there's an implementation guide that's gone out to the reference group.
Yep.
It's also been provided to the union for comment. At this point, it's on the app for review.
Yep.
I think what we'll do is, at our next reference group meeting, which is on February the 25th, we'll seek to have a discussion with members and likely finalize it then, but I don't think there's anything too controversial.
Great. Great. So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about in relation to these agreements?
No, I think we've really covered it all.
Great. Thanks, Yunbin.
Thank you, Rem, for joining me.